And it is 9 a.m. in the West Coast. It is 12 noon in the East Coast, and it's 7 p.m. in Jerusalem, the capital of Israel. Today is August 28, 2016, and this is Orly Benny Davis with Impossible Truth. Today on BBS Radio, we are going to talk to you about what is the big picture looks like. We're going to take it from around current affair to the conflict and to the, God forbid, but natural disasters. It's not easy to be alive these days, but it's not easy to pretend that we're alive and we're not doing anything about it. So we are here to make a difference. We are making a stand. We are praying together for the well-being of everybody all around the world. So let's start with a big prayer to what happened to in Italy. It's not easy to pass an earthquake. I've been in California, so I know how it a little bit how it feels. But they are really in big trouble right now there. Let's listen to that.
Disaster came in the night, fear amplified by the darkness and the sounds that began to fill it.
Luca.
The dazed Luca. Hunt for those who didn't make it outside just beginning. With dawn came full understanding, the strength of the quake bringing down a string of medieval villages scattered across the hilltops in Italian heartland. Amatrice seeming to have collapsed in on itself. Desperate scenes unfolded, people uncertain what to do or where to go as rescue teams started to pull survivors and bodies from the rubble. This man says he managed to escape his house as it collapsed. I've been out here 2.5 hours in my underwear, he says. We're waiting to see what happens. In another village, not far away, a hand in the rubble, that of an elderly woman trembling as a rescue worker tries to comfort her, asking if she can breathe. With more than 200 aftershocks, people here are still terrified. The Italian Prime Minister Matteo Renzi visited the region trying to offer hope.
Nei momenti di difficoltà l'Italia sa come fare.
No family, no city, no hamlet will be left behind, he said, although some villages say rescue workers have been slow to arrive. Sniffer dogs combed through the rubble, the race against a ticking clock in full swing by the end of the day. And as night crept back, teams worked to bring light to the town, bright pools in an inky dark to aid exhausted rescue teams, risking their lives. These men lifted up by digger to crawl into the gaping maw of collapsed layers. The town a contrast of frantic activity and a stillness speaking to what's been lost, of hope and of sorrow.
And Ian, this isn't the only town that's been affected, of course. Other ancient villages in these mountains have also been hit.
So much difficult work to be done in all of those small communities, including where you are, Margaret. So what are rescuers saying?
Well, they're going to be trying to identify people still missing. And they say as long as there's hope of finding survivors, they'll keep searching. They're going to search right through the night. But as you know, these disasters tend to take on a grim timetable of their own, and every second counts.
All right, we are back. It's Orly Benny Davis with The Impossible Truth. We are witnessing days of incredible pain and challenge ahead of Italy. It's not easy to start, to rebuild over the shambles, and the promise of the Prime Minister to rebuild it as it was, a little, you know, overstating what's the deal is. Because if we are human, if we consider to be a part of this universe, sometimes the world or the earth or God tells us something else. If it is in shambles now, we need to heal the population. We need to help them build a new house. But please don't promise to build it as it was, because building as it was destroyed. So you know, it's not really helpful to make them hope so high. Just let them rebuild it. You know, people are still in tent. And I know that one of the first countries that offer assistance was Israel. And as I was awake that night for some incredible coincidence, at 3 o'clock in the morning, I was watching all the channel, 3:30, 3:37, as they said, but for me it was 3:33, I think. CNN already announced that there was an earthquake. So by 4 a.m., I was on the phone with Italy, talking to my friend that they had to get out of his house because he was afraid that you know, the earthquake will keep on going and destroying, because he lives in the Apennini and the city of Fano, and that was in the middle, you know, in that center. In Rome, they felt it. I know the tourists felt it, but they kept on going. Something really odd for me. But it's not easy to have such a section of the country under seismic alert. I know that all Italy, as it is seismical. So they say that earthquakes are due to happen every so often. And living in California has the same sound to it, because you wake up in the morning and, you know, it's like a little one, and you don't feel it till 1994 it came. And luckily I was in Italy that night, but I came back the next day. I remember my thought. I remember driving back from LAX. First of all, everybody were hoping that when we landed that there was no earthquake or some aftershock, even that LAX is pretty far away from Northridge, where the center was there. And having to drive back to Encino, I looked around and I saw building out of their way, and I felt like it were a war zone. It's like something unreal. You feel it, you know. You can't. You leave one place, one condition. You come back and you find it, you know, in a situation where building were moved out of their base. You moved to the side. That's what happened in Northridge. That was really scary. It took me a little, but we left California. Business, we call it. But, you know, sometimes when the earth shaking, sometimes you take it elsewhere. And, you know, God help everybody, because nature is not a force to reckon with. It's really hard to handle. Anyway, so having said that, I know that I mentioned LAX, and LAX had a scare today, or, you know, yours yesterday. And I feel really, really concerned, because if the nerves of the people traveling is so on the verge of you jumping from a noise, or there was some kind of scare, it's not right. Maybe we need to start making extra cautions, alert, or security measure to ease the tension. Because, you know, security is something really good, but there is some fake conditioning to it. And we study it in the Bible, Torah. We study it because he said, a man that has a fence to his house, he has a false security. Because if somebody wants to enter, will enter. But the idea that he has a fence, it's a conditioning for his tranquility. So sometimes to give an extra measure of security to the population, they'll put them in ease to say that you're going to be okay. This is a safety zone. You're moving into, even though, you know, it will help also having security on maximum conditioning. But the idea of that The mental condition is really important to keep everybody safe. And keeping it safe, it means that everybody will be on good mode and conditioned. In case something happened, they will act. You don't want, you know, you don't want panic. Panic is not helpful to any condition. I know it's been a lot happening this week, and I'm telling you, there are a few things that drive me crazy, because when God calling you, the earth, nature, the universe are putting you on alert, you don't go back to, you know, to restriction of terrorism that attack women. So we're going to go to this next segment on this one, because I want to talk about what actually is happening in France with the Burkini war that they launched on the Muslim women.
It's time now for French Connections, our weekly look at the intricacies of life here in France. And this week we do have a biggie. We're going to wade into a controversy that is raging across the country. It concerns the local burkini bans. Now, those have been popping up in coastal towns all over the summer. And for those of you who have not been following this story, the burkini is a full-body swimsuit that's worn by some Muslim women that covers everything except for your face, your hands, and your feet. Now, the first question here to Florence Villemano, our French Connections pro, is why have the local mayors been banning the burkini in the first place?
Well, mayors have been citing a wide range of reasons. Some have been citing hygienic reasons, for instance. A lot of them have said it's a question of public order and security, given the current state of emergency that we're still here in France in the wake of the terrorist attacks. Others have gone further, though, and say that the burkini is a symbol of religious extremism and thus an insult to France's state secularism, laïcité, this very important thing that we've already talked about here on French Connections. Why don't we actually just listen to some of these mayors to explain why they've been banning the burkini?
I want to put an end to this clothing apartheid that goes against the community. This is France. This is the French Republic. Everyone is equal, without any distinction of race or religion.
Given the current climate we're in, everyone needs to make an effort to protect social harmony.
Now, what that mayor mentioned there, that idea of social harmony, is not really an expression we use that much in English, but it is truly fundamental to understanding what the burkini ban and what the debate are all about here in France.
That's right. It's our word du jour, in fact. Vivre ensemble, living together in harmony. Now, it's a very fundamental thing here in France. In fact, French authorities are terrified of the opposite of vivre ensemble, living together. They're terrified of a society broken up into competing ethnic, racial, or religious communities. This is known as communautarisme here in France. Now, authorities argue that secularism, laïcité, is the glue that allows French society to live together in harmony. The problem is, though, that France's estimated 5 to 6 million Muslims often feel targeted or stigmatized. In the name of living together and laïcité, headscarves were banned in public schools in 2004. In 2010, it was the full face covering veil, the niqab or the burqa, that was banned from public space. And now you have this burkini debate.
Now, interestingly, French authorities, of course, at the top level have been weighing in as well. Prime Minister Manuel Valls, for example, has said the burkini is provocative, archaic, not compatible with the values of the French Republic. And yet, he said there's no need to legislate on a national level.
That's right. Now, he gave an interview with a local paper, La Provence, that got a lot of attention because he gave his support to these local mayors that are banning the burkini. This is a quote from that interview. The burkini is not a new range of swimwear, a fashion. It's the expression of a political project, a counter-society based notably on the enslavement of women. And he actually even went further and joined calls for French Muslims to be more discreet. Now, as you can imagine, a lot of people were outraged by these comments, and critics say, you know, this is an unnecessary scandal here in France, a convenient distraction from real problems like unemployment or the terrorist threat. In fact, some people say this scandal could actually fuel a jihadist propaganda. Let's listen to some of these critics.
It's catastrophic, but unfortunately, it's symptomatic of the political climate we're in. There's a succession of scandals, one after the other, to occupy public and media space. But politicians are failing to put forward a unifying vision for the French.
Now, this is so fascinating for people who are outside of France to hear about this, because France is the land where you can go topless on a beach without any problem, and yet you cannot wear a burkini. How do French people, what do they think about this ban?
As you can imagine, it's a really mixed bag, and there are some really different opinions. I pulled together just a selection. Let's listen.
It's a step backwards with respect to women's rights.
It's as if we went swimming with huge crosses. Enough is enough.
On beaches, I don't mind. I see topless women, and that bothers me even more. It's ridiculous. I see naked people all the time. Why can't I cover myself up? We can do what we want.
Now, many people have taken to social media to continue this debate, and it's been fascinating to watch. I've pulled out just a selection. A lot of people, for instance, have shared this image where you can see they're comparing the burkini to a wetsuit, wondering how in the world can a piece of clothing be a security threat. But others say, no, let's not be naive. This is not just a piece of clothing. It's a symbol of oppression, of control over women.
And yet on the flip side, other people, including the woman who created the burkini herself, say it's a form of emancipation.
That's right. Some people say that the burkini was created in the first place to include women, to not exclude them, but to allow them to come to the beach in the first place. Now, this is another issue that's coming up. A lot of people accuse authorities of hypocrisy by telling women they can't wear something. France is guilty of controlling women as well. This is a cartoonist named Nawak, where you can see he says that freedom of choice for women is still too often made by men. Now, another thing that prompted a lot of outrage on social media were those images of armed cops asking a woman to remove what appeared to be a burkini. Now, several people said that this made them ashamed of being French and actually accused authorities of opening Pandora's box. You can see this is the Daily Mail's take on things. The burkini cops. A lot of people wonder, you know, what's going to come next after the burkini?
But there's something really important for our viewers to remember, is that there is a real deep debate here over the struggle for French identity.
Wow, a real debate. Two cops going on a woman, a Muslim woman on the beach, and forcing her to undo her dress. Do you believe it? Can you imagine something like that? You come to an American woman of any religion telling her you have to remove an outfit in the middle of the, on the beach with two armed guards in front of everybody. What are they thinking? Are they went insane? Are they insane? I'm Jewish, but I respect all religion. And your identity or crisis of identity, French, you really have to get a grip of reality. This is not identity crisis, as you call it. It's a shameful crisis because you like women to be naked instead of covered and respected by their own brothers and sisters and husbands. No, you're creating chaos. That's what you're creating. Instead of taking care of your own business. Of course, France. Yes, you are French. You are so good that even when you know to speak English, you don't even dare to speak the language. You come to France, you speak only French. Because we all have to look like you, feel like you, talk like you. And probably eat like you. And I can't call enough time that France get out all on high horses calling Israel all kind of names. All kind of names. Dude, abuse of power, everything. Because we fight terrorism since the existence of the Israeli state started. And before. But to come with cops and get women undressed, by law. And Sarkozy, oh, really? That's what you're standing for? I was hoping for a nice Sarkozy coming to play. We need a leadership. But oh boy, you started with the Burkini. How narrow-minded can be that idea? And Ségolène Royal, you are on, girl. You need to get the girls on, because if you guys coming on us in the beach with armed guards, disturbing any women of any sort, any color, any religion, you're abusing your power. And men, today, I'm calling you off on this one, because there isn't a movement to abuse women's rights lately. And they call it religion, anti-terrorism. You know, they decided to fight the women. Wow. The terrorists using boys to fight the West, and the West responding with fighting women. Man, wow. Guys, if America was made by cowards like that, there wouldn't be America. That's the difference. You see why America is the leader of the free world? They won't send the guys over on the girls in any kind. They won't even dare to think that way, because we girls won't let them. Anyway, guys, it's such an incredible day in history when they decide to go after the Muslim women, when they know that they're creating a really uproaring adversity between a man and a woman in a very tight, religion. It's not fair, it's ain't right, and it's not France that I love, okay? France that I love is a democratic powerhouse. Maybe you didn't look at your identity lately, but let me remind you who you are. You are the freedom and the liberty of Europe. Your colors are beautiful, your people are great, and your country is great. Get over this. It's not worthy of you. And then, I just listened to the Minister of Interior. I know that it was translated just, an hour ago. And I hear that he's banning a lot of things now. And the most important ban that I listened to was the ban on schooling of Iman overseas. Something that might be good, because it means that you don't want them to be radicalized outside. I respect that very much. And I hope that you keep up the good work and keep Europe safe, because we need you there in full power. So let's get some music after all this, just to relax a little bit. All right.
David, en México se piensa mucho en ti. Te has ganado el cariño de mi gente, de mi sangre, de mi tierra. Yo también te quiero mucho. Gracias por... Yo te
digo, mi amor, aunque no vuelvas, nunca, nunca tú eres buena, tú te mereces lo mejor que hay en la tierra. Cuenta conmigo siempre para ser feliz.
Wow, that was incredible. Juan Gabriel, God be with his soul. He left us all. One of the most iconic person that the Mexican, the Latinos music has. And Dio de Benedica, it's God will bless you, my love. And that's a blessing to all of you that have from his heart, which was incredible heart. That, but you know, he sings with the most incredible spirit. You should check some of his videos. Amazing, amazing show that he was giving. So, and he was singing with everybody. And he died only at 66 years old. So it's pretty a big loss for the music and to all my friends in Mexico, which I love so much. I hope that you know, his music will keep you happy for many years to come too. So keep the spirit up, and let's go on and listen to the Kelly File, which I love. She one of the most incredible journalists of Fox News, and I love to listen to her. Let's listen as much as we can to a segment of her show.
We're trying to do good things. If there's something wrong with creating jobs and saving lives, I don't know what it is. And the people who gave the money knew exactly what they were doing. And I have nothing to say about it. I'm very accepting. I'm really proud. I'm proud of what they've done.
We begin tonight with our chief intelligence correspondent, Catherine Herridge, reporting from Washington. Catherine?
Megan, tonight the Associated Press is standing its ground after Hillary Clinton's team tried and failed to get a correction. The Clinton campaign complained on the morning shows that this AP tweet was unfair, not accurate, and based on limited information.
Be outrageous.
And the White House defended Clinton, telling reporters that even before she became Secretary of State, there was a transparency agreement.
To ensure that the ethics requirements that are in place went above and beyond those guidelines that are set by law.
But the Associated Press says their reporting is based on documents released by a federal court after they had to sue the State Department, and it took 3 years for the AP to get the Clinton schedules that show the foundation donors. And it made sense to analyze meetings outside her regular government duties as secretary. Quote, this reporting was done by the same AP investigative team that discovered Mrs. Clinton's private email server and whose reporting last week resulted in the resignation of Donald Trump's top campaign strategist. Megan?
Catherine Herridge, thank you. In just a few moments, we're going to speak with Congressman Trey Gowdy, who just got back from Capitol Hill, where he personally reviewed some of the FBI's documents from its investigation into Hillary Clinton's private email server. He'll tell us what he found. But first, we are joined by Roland Martin, host and managing editor of TV One's News One Now. Roland, great to have you on the program. Thank you for being here.
Great to be here.
So what do you make of this, of the Clinton Foundation? As we're just looking through the publications today, USA Today, Boston Globe, New York Post, Detroit News, Daily Beast, all saying this thing ought to be shut down at a minimum if she wins.
Well, first and foremost, if she wins the presidency, you will have her as president. You will have former President Bill Clinton serving as first husband, if you will. I do believe what they should do is transition out of business because even though they've done phenomenal work, you're now the commander-in-chief. You're now the leader of the free world. And so, look, I sit on a group of 50-can education group, students first. We merge transferred assets. And so you can do that. You can partner with an existing NGO to do the work.
But do you think it's shady now? What do you think of the existence of it now? Laura Ingraham was on Fox earlier calling the Clinton Foundation a machine for influence peddling. She's suggesting that they use it. They use it to sort of, you know, to get donations. They use her power as Secretary of State to sort of convince people to donate to their foundation.
Well, first of all, I would disagree with that because let's keep in mind, she's a former First Lady. She's a former United States Senator. I think she probably has a hell of a lot more relationships, even if she wasn't Secretary of State. And the reality is the work that they're doing as an NGO across the world is critically important. You have President Jimmy Carter, who probably comes closest to having his own organization that does work around the world. It's very rare to, frankly, have a former president that has this type of entity. So I would say Laura is absolutely wrong. She certainly has an axe to grind line here. I don't. The bottom line is here. They do good work. But I do believe what the Clinton folks have to understand is it's not simply just a question of what took place in meetings. It's also the appearance. And so I think one of the things that they should do, and they really should do this, they should say after Labor Day, they are going to suspend accepting any funds into the foundation because you're in the middle of a president.
All right, we're back because we cannot listen to it all fight, but the gist of the thing is like that. We have an ex-president and a candidate for the presidency, something that never happened before. So to tell us that we have a new kind of rules in, you know, collecting money or something that, you know, if somebody is donating and is meeting the wife of the head of the Heritage Clinton Foundation, I really see no sense trying to catch them because there is non-information, even though that I know that Rudy Giuliani said that there is something there. But until there is no really proof. I said before, you know, last show, we talked about the fact that they own a lot. And it was weird, you know, to come when they're talking about Trump that owes so much because he invests all the money in the land, which he believes America. And for them, it's like collecting. You know, it's not a balance. It means that you provide for yourself when the capitalist Trump kind of is investing in the land where the socialist kind of democratic candidate, instead of giving to the people, actually collecting. So it's really imbalance that I don't know to explain. But having said that, I don't want to speculate even if it's right or wrong, because Clinton is next president, and as he said, he is proud of what he did, and of course everybody should be proud when they have a really extraordinary work from life, you know, some success, but in the Middle East, the message they left, it doesn't matter, you know, it's not Donnie's responsibility, it's the world, and it's collapse, everything collapses. Maybe, you know, to make a world better, you need to reconstruct it, I guess. So I'm not sure that I like the dismantling part for before reconstructing, but right now we need to get to grip of what the situation is and go forward. Now, you know, the only smart move in the recent days that I can talk about is the Brexit, because at the end of the game, England took off from sinking ship as the European Union. American race to the presidency is a colossal, colossal mistakes of events, because they are dragging America down the tube like that. And I am from outside can tell you that it's not healthy to ruin a country. Even though you don't like your opponent, it doesn't mean that you destroy the presidency legacy. You don't do that, Mr. Trump. Mrs. Hillary, if you lose to Donald Trump, you should come back and respect, because you are a part of this incredible nation. So I'm calling you guys all to understand that American leadership is in stakes right now, and it's you're jeopardizing it by letting this charade, the circus, go around. And I remember my friends from, you know, incredible defense records, they would say, you know, until those clowns will settle in. I'm sorry, we need to settle those horses. You have 70 days to the election. You need to calm down, get a grip of your policy, and may the good guy win, right? We cannot ruin the leader of the free world just because your ego can afford to lose. this is a sport like any other. It's a sport of people. This time is managing people. And please don't try to sell me that you guys are, you know, divine. This is not providence, okay, that you're talking about. It's a move. Everybody has horses in the game, and everybody wants to win. Now, Donald Trump is going to be a winner anyway, because if he wins, he becomes the president. We're going to have America that is going to build itself. Of course, we need to talk about his policy because it's so awful. And, you know, I know that some people told him to calm down and get some humble existence, which he cannot even comprehend what it is. But he has a good heart. He has a heart of a lion. So he needs to study hard where he's taking the nation in his policy. Okay? We know that the economical policy will be to rebuild. It'll build everything. Everything that America can be dealt with, chipped on, or whatever, negotiate, it'll do a good job, okay? Let's give it to him. The fact that a matter of justice, I'm sure that he would like everybody, you know, to be according to the, you know, to the law, of course. I don't think that is going to be any kind of, there are the rules of the land that will protect every move, and there is no way that somebody will think that, you know, he's going to be a racist. He's not a racist, or if he is, there are rules to protect, because everybody has his own bad deeds some point or another. That's why we're human. But the regulation help you check and balance, that's all. So, and the position of the president is really incredibly tight by a lot of people working and know the job and do the job. And you're good as your advisor. That's simple. And the crowd of people that are coming with Donald Trump, like Rudy Giuliani, like Newt Gingrich, like many others, are incredible. So and I trust them, and they are not fools. And please, you know, get off those craziness and shame calling. And you know the people that on the Democratic side that say that Trump is losing. Well, guys, first of all, I don't know where you're thinking you're winning. Because the Democrats are losing in the public opinion. Look what's going on. So if you lose or win, Democratic candidate is going to be a respectable one. And please don't make it again like the Bush election, that you are a bad, bad loser sometimes. Because what you did with Al Gore, of course, you won the public vote, right? I don't know if you won the public vote. I know that he lost the race and he conceded. And then we're talking about the next race, 4 years later. You know, Bush won again. So why not to be Americans and start understanding we need to rebuild the economy first? We cannot overtax those working people. And, you know, Hillary Clinton's plans is to tax more people. So I don't know. We cannot afford another 4 years of a socialist ruling. I really believe that. We need something to ignite the economy. And trust me, on this side of the land, on the little country that called Israel, we are trying to manage a lot of of business ideas and innovation and startup to ignite the world economy. And I'm not kidding. When God gave us the rule, now you can believe or not, but I do believe, the rule to enlighten the world, to be a light upon the world, it means that we need to help shed some light. So we're working hard to cooperate. We're working hard to help. We're working hard, you know, to keep safe the area. Now we are working to cooperate with Jordan. And we are building the seat across, I don't know how they call it, but it's going to be the incredible, incredible canal between the seas. Amazing. Let's start having amazing thing. And talking about amazing, I wanna really, really say how amazing was the act of rescuing 262 elephants in Africa by the team of Prince Harry. I'm fascinated with this guy that is incredible. He goes to Africa. He takes the conservatives, team and help move 262 elephants to safety. Do you understand the heart of this guy is? Think. People on the other side of the moon are actually trying to do some good, save people, save lives, and save animals. And the way you treat your animal, you know how you treat your people. And instead, people, some other, you know, people in the other side of the moon try to attack women, try to enslave them. And fighting enslave, it's not the way that, you know, trafficking women is a big deal of crimes in the universe. And we need all to put a little extra notch on that, because there is a God and it's not us, all right? And he sees everything. So we need to start get our act together. And I know it sounds so religious, so believer, but yeah, but I do believe in him. And I know that we need to be better. And we deserve. We have a great spirit in us. Our humankind is a special, special brand of entities that we need to give. And look what we've done so far. We created this incredible mass. When we are all connected, this world is changing. Let's do it for the better. And I know that they didn't decide to stop the war in Syria because the American and the Russian didn't get along. Now, tell me, how does it work? You guys, and I'm jumping from one issue to another because we're almost running out of time, but talking about incredible world we are, we have to say what we are thinking too. So the Russian and the Americans going to a meeting. The Secretary of State and Lavrov, the Secretary of State of Russia, Kerry and Lavrov. Wow, two handsome, good-looking men, smart, and patient enough to close the deal. What was in the middle? What happened in the middle that you didn't close the deal? You guys meeting to agree, not to disagree, to keep on the world. Now, let's listen what we have. We have the Turks that attack Kurds. At the end of this game, the Kurds are the one to lose? Are we counting right? I know that we need a whole segment on Turks and their involvement in Syria. All of a sudden, they start attacking in Syria, and no world power told them to stop and get back to their own Turk coup that he converted to dictatorship. And you guys are letting him attack people, women, children, because they are Kurds on the pretense that they are ISIS. I don't know what you guys are thinking, but let me tell you that we need more attention, and ceasefire will be a good start. We need a ceasefire now. Stop the fight in Syria. We need to give them food. Those children deserve a night of sleep without bombardment. I don't know what to say, how to say it to anybody listening. You guys have no clue what you are doing when you don't take your time to decide to settle. If the Russian and the American met together and didn't conclude, something is wrong with the picture. Or maybe you need somebody to settle it with you. Maybe somebody has to coordinate. You know, because I must tell you something for the record is there is a problem with translation. And nobody who speaks many languages will tell you more than me that when you have a different culture, a different continent, you speak, even if you speak the language, you don't understand them. So I think maybe somebody needs a real translation in between. Now, let's get one segment that I want to put because in Israel we lost one of the greatest ministers that we had, a champion of the military, a champion of the government, a champion of society, a labor leader, Fuad Ben Eliezer, incredible man, incredible soul, a giant. He died yesterday and we are all mourning. Tomorrow is the funeral. And I want to cap a little segment for him.
Palestinian Economic Minister Dr. Hassan Abu Libde arrives in Jerusalem. He's come for a rare meeting and public appearance with his Israeli counterpart, Minister Binyamin Ben Eliezer. The MediaLine news agency provided a forum for a working meeting between the two ministers. They then faced a grilling from Israeli and Palestinian journalists who were brought together by the agency's Mideast Press Club. Jerusalem's Notre Dame Center was the setting for the latest event of the Mideast Press Club, which aims to advance professional and personal relationships between Israeli and Palestinian journalists.
Welcome, marhaba, shalom. I'm Felice Friedson, president of the MediaLine, an American news agency specializing in the Middle East. In the 1980s, into the beginning of the 1990s, people shopped in each other's shops. That's what economy is about. They visited each other's towns. 2010 tells a different story.
I would like to state that very, very clearly. I'm encouraging and I will back any investment that will come to the West Bank. There's no questions. For me, it's a deal and ideal to see flourishing days in the West Bank.
Abu Libde said Israeli restrictions were harming the Palestinian economy.
Sir, if the access and movement restrictions on the Palestinian economy are taken away today, I guarantee you this economy will grow in double digits for many years. There are a lot of potentials that are not realized because of the various Israeli impediments.
Abu Libde charged that Israeli Prime Minister Netanyahu was not serious about peace, while Ben Eliezer challenged his Palestinian counterpart to take dramatic actions.
Please send my best regards to your president and tell him that my advice to leave aside all the mediators to come to Bibi Netanyahu, to invite Bibi Netanyahu to Ramallah, okay? And to open the official negotiation there.
Israeli, Palestinian, and foreign correspondents challenged the ministers with numerous questions ranging from economics to the prospects for peace. Journalists included Greer Faye Cashman of the Jerusalem Post, Muhammad Abu Khader of Al-Quds, Gwen Ackerman of Bloomberg News, Ahmed Abidat of Israel Radio, and Najwan Simri from Al.
All right, that was a part of a segment of a rare meeting between the minister Fuad Ben Eliezer, may God bless his soul, and the minister of economy development of the Palestinian side. They promise prosperity. It can happen. It's nothing changed. They still have to talk. And I know that the Russian are organizing talks now with between sides, which is incredible because the American and the Russian needs to decide what kind of a venue it's going to be. And one thing I must tell, that Donald Trump ideas about removing the restriction on 501c from any religious venue to hold a political rally or political segment, or you know, anybody who visit any religious location know that people want to talk about this, the leaders. And if you don't talk about the leaders with the community, where are you going to be talking about? So Donald Trump's idea of removing that restriction is really good, because as you see in that segment, people actually use a very old religious place to talk and convene. Now, being in such a central part of every community, the religious buildings are awesome. They're great. They have libraries sometimes. They have a place to sit and to eat most of the time. And there is no reason for the people to decide that they're going to obstruct coming together of people just because there is a God under, you know, on the top. Actually, it's so proper for people to come to God instead that God to come to the government. I think that everything will fall in the right place. Now, we are out of time. I know that this segment was a little scarce. It was a little all over the place, but it's just the beginning. When we start talking, sometimes it seems confused, but we all are working toward one end. And for me, Jerusalem needs to be the center of spiritual renewal of all the world to come. That's why we all calling upon the world to come together and give Israel the opportunity to build a center, a spiritual center for the all people to come and visit. This is the holy city in Jerusalem, and there is a reason why it's there and why it's called that way. So I think we're done for today, but God willing, this next week we'll make a lot of song, a lot of romantic song, because it's the new, you know, school day starts in Israel too. And I wish all the children a happy, happy new scholastic year. I hope we start an incredible beginning of awesome learning and unprecedented renewal. God bless you all from the Holy Land. It's Orly Benny Davis checking out. Bye-bye.